Right now, as you listen to this, there's this constant invisible hum of activity happening inside every single one of your cells. It's really the fundamental process of life itself, something we often just take entirely for granted, yet it's happening with, you know, incredible precision minute by minute.
Absolutely.
So today we're taking a deep dive into this hidden world, specifically the cell cycle, and we're drawing our insights directly from the really illuminating lectures of Dr. Hoffman.
Yeah, and Dr. Hoffman's central idea, really, is that the cell cycle covers everything that happens within the entire lifetime of a single cell.
Everything.
Yeah, think of it like one generation for a cell, from the moment it's created all the way until it finishes its life by splitting into two brand new cells.
Okay.
And that division, that's really the defining event. It sets the start and the finish line for each generation.
Gotcha. So our mission today is to really unpack why cells divide, how this, incredibly intricate process unfolds, and also what safeguards are built in to make sure it all runs perfectly.
Right. And what happens when they don't?
Exactly. And the implications when those safeguards don't quite work. So expect some surprising facts and some really critical insights, all coming from Dr. Hoffman's material. Okay, so Dr. Hoffman lays out three absolutely crucial roles for cell division. Where should we start?
Well, the first, and maybe the most fundamental role, is reproduction.
Okay.
For single-celled organisms, you know, bacteria, yeast, that kind of thing, cell division is how they reproduce. That's their whole strategy.
Right, it's everything for them.
Exactly. And what's really fascinating, something Dr. Hoffman points out, is how different this is from, say, how humans reproduce.
Mm-hmm.
When a bacterium divides, the original parent cell actually, well, it ceases to exist. It becomes the two new offspring cells.
Wow. So it doesn't just have offspring. It becomes them. That's quite a thought. Almost like cellular reincarnation.
Kind of, yeah. It's a complete transformation into the next generation. And it ties right back into cell theory, you know. All cells come from pre-existing cells. Division just starts the next cycle.
Okay, so that's reproduction. What's the second role?
The second one is really key for multicellular organisms like us. It's growth and development.
Ah, right. Making more of us.
Well, yes. But Dr. Hoffman explains it's not about our individual cells just getting enormous. We start as one single cell, a zygote.
Right.
But we grow by adding more cells, trillions of them. And that obviously needs constant cell division.
Makes sense.
And development is the other side of that coin. It's about those new cells taking on specific jobs, differentiating, becoming nerve cells, muscle cells, skin cells, all starting from that one initial cell.
Okay, so growth is more cells, development is specialized cells.
Got it.
And the third role?
The third is tissue renewal. This is also mainly for multicellular life. It's all about replacing cells that get damaged or killed, or even cells that are programmed to die off as part of normal processes.
Programmed to die.
Yeah, it's called apoptosis. But even just wear and tear, Dr. Hoffman mentions we lose billions of cells every single day. Think red blood cells, skin cells, just constantly being replaced.
Billions. Every day. That's staggering. Why red blood cells, though? You mentioned them specifically. Is there something about them?
Yeah, it's a great question. Dr. Hoffman gives a couple of key reasons. First, in mammals, our red blood cells actually ditch their nucleus as they mature.
They lose their nucleus.
Right.
But isn't that where the DNA is?
Exactly. No nucleus, no DNA blueprint. So they can't make new proteins to repair themselves if they get damaged. They're basically just bags specialized for carrying oxygen with hemoglobin.
So they trade repairability for oxygen capacity.
Pretty much. And second, he says they live a very rough life, constantly getting squeezed through tiny capillaries. They just wear out fast, maybe in a couple of weeks.
Wow.
So they have to be continuously replaced through cell division. It's a perfect example of tissue renewal in action.
Okay, so that covers the why. Before we get into the actual how of division, let's talk about the cargo, the genetic material inside the nucleus.
Mm-hmm.
What's Dr. Hoffman's take on what that looks like?
Right. So most of the time, when you look inside a nucleus, you don't see neat little X-shaped chromosomes like in the diagrams.
No.
No, mostly it's what's called chromatin. Dr. Hoffman describes it as a tangle, basically, a jumble of DNA wrapped around various proteins. It's all there, but it's usually unwound and loose so the cell can actually, you know, read the genes.
Okay, so it's usually messy.
Pretty much. But he makes a key point. If you do start seeing thicker, distinct strands, maybe stained purple in a microscope slide, that's a big clue.
A clue for what?
That the cell is getting ready to divide, because that means the chromatin has already started to condense, to coil up tightly.
Ah, okay. So condensing is step one towards division.
Mm-hmm.
What are DNA's main jobs then? in this whole cycle?
It really has two major functions, according to Dr. Hoffman. One is transcription. That's its day job, you could say.
The day job.
Yeah. During most of the cell's life, the DNA is loose, accessible, so that the cell can read the genes and make the proteins it needs to function, like a library where books are being used. But the other critical function, especially for division, is replication, copying itself. And here's a really crucial point from Dr. Hoffman. By the time you see that chromatin's starting to condense, replication has already happened.
Already? Before it even looks like it's dividing?
Yes, absolutely vital. Because each new daughter cell needs a full, identical copy of the entire DNA library, so the parent cell has to duplicate everything first.
That makes sense. Okay, Dr. Hoffman also clarifies the word game. Chromatin, chromatid, chromosome. Can you break that down? It sounds confusing.
It definitely can be, but he explains it well. A chromosome is basically chromatin that's condensed so much you can see it as a distinct structure.
Okay.
Now, here's the key. When you typically see a chromosome visually, it's almost always a replicated chromosome.
Meaning it's already doubled.
Exactly. It looks like that classic X shape because it's made of two identical sister chromatids joined at the hip, so to speak, at a point called the centromere.
So the X isn't one chromosome. It's one replicated chromosome made of two chromatids.
Precisely. Dr. Hoffman even says the common textbook picture showing a single unreplicated chromosome before replication is kind of a lie for clarity. By the time it's visible, it's usually already doubled up, ready to be split.
That's a really important distinction. So we're seeing it primed for separation.
You got it. And then after the cell divides, those chromosomes in the new cells will uncoil, loosen back up into chromatin so they can get back to their day job transcription.
Right, making proteins again. Okay, let's zoom out. Dr. Hoffman uses this schematic drawn kind of like a cycle. What are the main parts of that cycle?
Yeah, that diagram is really helpful. The whole cycle is basically split into two major phases. The biggest part, where the cell spends most of its time, is called interphase.
Interphase.
And interphase itself is divided into three subphases. First is G1, or GAP1. Dr. Hoffman calls this the main lifetime of the cell. It's doing its specific job, liver cell, doing liver stuff, skin cell doing skin cell stuff, mainly through transcription.
Just living its life.
Pretty much. Then comes the S phase. S stands for synthesis. This is the crucial part where DNA synthesis, or replication, happens.
Ah, the copying phase.
Exactly. And Dr. Hoffman notes, once a cell enters S phase, it's basically committed itself to ending its own life to create two new cells.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the centrosome's key organizing centers for division, they duplicate during S phase too.
Okay, committed. And then?
Then there's G2, or GAP2. Here, the cell makes proteins that are specifically needed for cell division. And this is also when the chromatin really starts to condense noticeably. The cell's making its final preparations.
Got it. So G1, S, G2, that's all interphase. What's the other major part?
The other part is the M phase, or mitotic phase. And Dr. Hoffman is clear. M phase is not the same thing as mitosis, though mitosis is part of it.
Okay, what's the difference?
M phase is the actual division part. It includes two distinct processes. First is mitosis, which is the careful division of the nucleus and its contents, the DNA.
The genetic material splitting.
Right. And he stresses this is a eukaryotic thing because only eukaryotes have nuclei, and it has to be very, very careful. Got to make sure each new nucleus gets exactly one complete identical set of DNA.
Makes sense. And the second part of M phase.
That's cytokinesis. This is the division of the cytoplasm, all the rest of the cell stuff, the organelles, the fluid. Dr. Hoffman describes this as a much rougher division compared to mitosis. The goal isn't perfect equality of organelles, just splitting the cell body.
Ah, okay. So mitosis is precise DNA division. Cytokinesis is the messier splitting of the rest. Fascinating. Let's dive into mitosis then, the careful part. How does Dr. Hoffman break down those steps?
Right. He outlines five subdivisions of mitosis, and often the diagrams include a bit of G2 before it and cytokinesis overlapping at the end, just for context.
Okay.
So starting just before mitosis proper, in G2 of interphase, remember, DNA is replicated, but still loose chromatin. We have two centrosomes ready to go, and the nuclear envelope is still there, enclosing everything.
Got the starting picture. What's first in mitosis?
First is prophase. Here, that loose chromatin condenses down into those visible, distinct chromosomes, the X shapes. At the same time, microtubules start growing from the centrosomes, pushing them towards opposite ends of the cell, forming an early mitotic spindle. But crucially, the nuclear envelope is still intact.
Okay, condensing chromosomes, spindle starts forming. Next.
Next is prometaphase. This is a big transition. The key event. The nuclear envelope breaks down, disintegrates.
Ah, so the chromosomes are let loose in the cytoplasm.
Exactly. Dr. Hoffman says this is critical, so the spindle microtubules can actually reach and attach to the chromosomes. The spindle fully matures with centrosomes at opposite poles, and we see two types of microtubules he describes.
Two types.
Yeah. Kinetochore microtubules attach to specific protein structures on the chromosomes called kinetochores. Think of them like handles on each sister chromatid. And then non-kinetochore microtubules overlap and push against each other, helping to elongate the cell.
Okay, one type grabs the chromosomes, the other pushes the cell apart. Clever. What happens next?
Then we hit metaphase. This is the shortest phase, apparently. All the replicated chromosomes get lined up right in the middle of the cell.
Lined up?
Yeah, at the metaphase or equatorial plane. It's an imaginary line equidistant from the two spindle poles. They're all aligned there, ready for the split.
Poised in the middle, then what?
Then anaphase. This is where, as Dr. Hoffman puts it, something actually splits. The sister chromatids of each replicated chromosome finally separate.
The X splits apart.
Exactly. And once they separate, they're considered individual unreplicated chromosomes. These new chromosomes then start moving towards opposite poles of the cell pulled by the spindle.
Okay, they separate and move apart. How do they move? You mentioned it wasn't like reeling them in.
Right. This is super cool. Dr. Hoffman explains the evidence shows it's not the spindle poles reeling them in like fishing lines. Instead, the kinetochore microtubules act like tracks, like little roads.
Little roads.
Yeah. And motor proteins located at the kinetochore literally walk the chromosome along that microtubule track towards the pole.
They walk.
They walk. And get this. As the chromosome walks along, the microtubule road is dismantled behind it. Tubulin subunits are removed from the kinetochore end.
That is incredible. Building the road and taking it down right behind you.
Mm.
Wow. Cellular mechanics are amazing.
Totally amazing. Okay, so after the chromosomes move apart in anaphase, we get to the final stage of mitosis, telophase.
Okay.
This is basically when the separated, unreplicated chromosomes arrive fully at the opposite poles. And then new nuclear envelopes start to form around each complete set of chromosomes. So now you have two distinct nuclei within the one still elongated cell.
Two nuclei in one cell, temporarily.
Exactly. And Dr. Hoffman notes that cytokinesis, the splitting of the cytoplasm, usually starts sometime during telophase.
Right, that final pinch or split. And you mentioned that cytokinesis looks different in animal versus plant cells.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Hoffman highlights this.
He does. It's a major difference because of the cell wall in plants. In animal cells, you get what's called a cleavage furrow. He compares it to pulling a drawstring on a bag. A ring of actin microfilaments contracts around the middle, pinching the cell membrane inwards until it splits into two separate daughter cells.
Like tightening a belt.
Exactly. But plant cells can't do that because they have that rigid cell wall outside the membrane.
Right. Can't pinch a box.
Exactly. So instead, vesicles filled with cell wall material gather in the middle at the old metaphase plate. They fuse together, forming a structure called cell plate.
A plate.
Yeah, this plate grows outwards until it fuses with the existing plasma membrane and cell wall, completely dividing the space into two new daughter cells, each with its own wall.
Fascinatingly different solutions to the same problem. And the end result, Dr. Hoffman emphasizes, is normally two daughter cells that are genetically identical clones of each other and the parent.
That's the crucial outcome, yes. Perfect copies, usually.
It's just mind-bogglingly precise. But how do cells know when to do all this? When to start, when to stop? Dr. Hoffman gets into the controls, right? The regulation.
Absolutely. This is where it gets really elegant. He talks about early fusion experiments that gave clues.
Fusion experiments.
Yeah. Scientists fused cells that were in different phases of the cycle, like fusing an S-phase cell replicating DNA with a G1 cell, not replicating.
Wow.
The G1 nucleus immediately started replicating its DNA, suggesting there was some chemical signal in the S-phase cell telling it to do so.
Wow.
And fusing an M-phase cell in mitosis with a G1 cell made the G1 nucleus try to start mitosis, even without copied DNA. So clear evidence for chemical signals driving the cycle forward.
Okay, so there are signals. This leads to the idea of checkpoints, right?
Mm-hmm.
What are those exactly?
Right. Dr. Hoffman clarifies they aren't physical gates, but sets of conditions at the molecular level. Things that have to be true or met for the cell to proceed.
Like a go-no-go decision point.
Exactly. And he highlights the G1 checkpoint as fundamentally important. This is the main decision point. Commit to division, go into S phase, or hang back in G1.
And if it hangs back indefinitely.
If it gets a permanent red light at G1, yeah, like most of your mature nerve cells or muscle cells, Dr. Hoffman explains, it's considered to be in the G0 phase. It's basically parked in G1, doing its job, but not progressing towards division.
Whereas a skin cell would just fly past that checkpoint.
Pretty much, yeah, because of the constant need for renewal.
Okay, so what are these important signals Dr. Hoffman talks about? The molecules that give the green light.
The key players he discusses are a pair of proteins, cyclin and CDK, which stands for cyclin-dependent kinase.
Okay, cyclin and CDK.
So CDK is a type of enzyme called a kinase. Its job is to add phosphate groups to other proteins, which usually switches them on or off. Dr. Hoffman notes CDK is always present in the cell, but it's inactive on its own.
It needs a partner.
It needs cyclin. Cyclin is the partner protein, and its concentration cycles up and down, hence the name. The cell makes it. Its levels build up during G1S and G2, peaking right around the start of M phase.
Okay, so cyclin levels rise.
Yet as cyclin levels rise, it binds to CDK. That binding activates the CDK enzyme. The activated cyclin CDK complex, sometimes called MPF, mitosis promoting factor when it peaks, then goes around phosphorylating other target proteins, and that's what actually triggers the cell to move through the checkpoints and into the next phase, like starting mitosis.
And then cyclin goes away again.
Yep. Once the cell gets through mitosis, the cyclin gets rapidly broken down, its levels plummet, the CDK becomes inactive again, and the signal turns off, ready for the next cycle. It's a beautiful regulatory loop.
Wow. That's elegant.
Yeah.
But it's not just internal signals, is it? Dr. Hoffman mentioned external cues, too.
That's right. The cell also listens to its environment. He gives examples like PDGF, platelet-derived growth factor. It's a chemical signal released, for example, at wound sites.
To stimulate healing.
Exactly. It tells nearby cells, like fibroblasts, to start dividing to repair the tissue. His experiment showed they wouldn't divide without it, but add PDGF, and they proliferate.
Okay, chemical signals from outside. What else?
There are also mechanical signals. Anchorage dependence means many cells, like the ones lining your tissues, need to be attached to a surface, like a dish in the lab or a connective tissue in your body, to divide. If they're floating free, they won't.
They need to be anchored.
Yeah. And then there's density-dependent inhibition. This is amazing. Cells generally stop dividing when they get too crowded, when they make contact with each other.
They sense their neighbors.
Seems like it. Dr. Hoffman explains it as a signal that gets triggered when cells bump into each other, basically saying, okay, the space is full, stop dividing now.
That's incredible. Internal clocks, external signals, even knowing when it's too crowded. It really highlights how tightly regulated this has to be.
Absolutely critical. Cells must divide when needed, but just as importantly, they must not divide when they shouldn't.
Which leads us, unfortunately, to what happens when those controls fail. This is where cancer comes in, right?
Exactly. Dr. Hoffman defines cancer fundamentally as a genetic disorder, meaning it starts with defects in the DNA, in the genes.
Faulty blueprints.
Right. These defects lead to faulty proteins, often the very proteins that are supposed to control the cell cycle checkpoints. So the cell loses its stop signals, its ability to regulate division.
And Dr. Hoffman mentioned why it's more common as we age.
Yes. He explains that our DNA is constantly taking hits, getting damaged from sunlight, chemicals in the environment, even just random copying errors during division. Over many decades, enough critical damage can accumulate in those control genes.
So it's an accumulation of errors over time.
That seems to be a major factor. A single cell with faulty controls starts dividing when it shouldn't, making exact copies of itself, including the faulty genes. That uncontrolled growth forms a tumor.
Yeah, and the real danger is when it spreads.
Yes. He highlights metastasis when cancer cells break off from the original tumor, get into the bloodstream or lymph system, and start new tumors elsewhere in the body. That, he states, is when cancer often becomes life-threatening. It really underscores why early detection is so important.
A sobering reminder of how vital these controls are. Just quickly, before we wrap up, what about simpler organisms like bacteria? How do they handle division? Dr. Hoffman touched on that.
Yeah, briefly. Prokaryotes, like bacteria, don't have a nucleus or do mitosis. They use a simpler process called binary fission.
Binary fission.
It still involves replicating their DNA, usually a single circular chromosome, and then the cell essentially just pinches in half. Much simpler, but achieves the same basic outcome. Two new genetically identical cells, which for them means reproduction.
Same goal. Simpler path.
Exactly. And he even mentioned there's diversity even among eukaryotes, like dinoflagellates, where the nucleus doesn't break down during division, just showing nature's variations on a theme.
What an incredible journey, really, from thinking about that constant invisible hum in our cells to unpacking this amazing molecular choreography, the signals, the checkpoints. Dr. Hoffman really brings to life how this isn't simple at all. It's truly profound engineering.
It really is. The level of precision needed for healthy division is just astounding when you think about it. And understanding that precision, as Dr. Hoffman explained, really clarifies why the failures, the loss of control, are so significant, especially linking to cancer as we age.
Yeah. So maybe the next time you just sit quietly, you can take a moment to appreciate that relentless, meticulous work going on inside you. Billions of cells dividing, renewing, keeping everything in balance. It's kind of an unheralded miracle happening constantly.
A good way to put it.
Definitely keep diving deep into the unseen worlds both around us and within us. There's always more to discover.